finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It is playoff season, baby. The Milwaukee Brewers will begin their National League pennant chase in the wild card series that gets underway October 1st. That's Tuesday at American Family Field, the team they will be hosting. We don't know the answer to that as we sit here on Sunday night talking about it, because Monday is when we will have a couple makeup games between the Mets and the Braves. That is going to decide who the Brewers will face. There are two options. They will either host the New York Mets, or if the New York Mets win neither of those two games, it will be the Arizona Diamondbacks. Pretty simple stuff, although kind of also complicated, because here we are, the end of the regular season should be upon us, and yet it is not actually upon us. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined, of course, by my colleague and friend, Kurt Hoge of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Kurt, you did it!
You made it to the end of the season!
You made it to the end of the regular season!
We made it to the end of the regular season. Mm-hmm. We were joking in the off-recording part of this that divorce rates are higher among contending team beat writers than non-contending team beat writers. So I have not made it to the end of the year yet. I am still married. So this is great news. Let's check back in 2 weeks.
First of all, that data is unsupported, but that still logically maybe follows a path, because think about it. You found out Sunday night when the Brewers were going to play these first two games, which actually is more information than I thought we might have at this point.
I'm very grateful for that. I thought it was going to be like Monday night.
Yes. So it's a 4:30 start-ish Tuesday. It's a 6:30 start-ish on Wednesday. Technically, Thursday's to be announced. Right now, scheduled as a 7:30 start. Probably going to be in that neighborhood anyway, if they are one of the series still alive on Thursday. So just a little piece of information, but still don't know who the Brewers are going to play because of this doubleheader. So I guess that's where we have to start. I can't believe we're still talking about who are they going to face in the playoffs, but the season is over. Only not quite. The Braves and Mets ran into Hurricane. Are we calling it Hurricane Helene? I guess I haven't followed. Is it Helene? I haven't followed
My only past history, I think, with this name is The Office. Pam's mother, I believe, is named Helene.
Helene. I did not get that far into The Office. I shouldn't maybe admit that on a podcast. That's gonna come back.
You are the ultimate TV man.
I am. That's true.
I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, The Office, you know, because I don't want to come off as a like, I feel like that's faux pas online, and that's important to me, is to be cool online. So I'll be like, yeah, you know, it's fine. I prefer the British one. It's a cool show, but like, it gets really old by season, you know, whatever.
Right.
No, I like The Office. I'm pretty sure, though, Helene is the character. And that's how I've been saying it in my head. But I've never said it out loud. And I've never heard it said out loud.
Yeah.
So Hurricane Chris Sale will not be coming to Milwaukee. How about that? Back to
Hurricane Chris Sale is staying at home. Yeah. Somebody who speaks a little bit of French, I want to call it Helene and not pronounce the H. I think that's wrong. I do like TV. It's mostly drama, not a comedy guy. I have seen a lot of The Office. A lot of it. You know, Bernard years.
You love your true crime documentary series.
If it involves Jimmy Hoffa being buried at American Family Field, I'm into that.
I was going to say, if it involves content, if you can turn it into content,
100%,
then it's up your alley.
There is a very dark one on Netflix a couple years ago, for example, that has given me more page views than I know what to do with 2 years later. So Wow. I can't believe we've gotten so far off course here.
Welcome to Microbrew. Yeah. If you're a first time listener, this is how it goes. The playoffs begin.
We're
4 minutes in. We should. Let's do it.
We should talk more, actually. We don't often. I try to always bring it back. But you know what? It's the playoffs. We should be talking about what true crime documentaries we're watching right now, or what TV shows, what HBO specials, things like that. We should. We will talk baseball, though. Diamondbacks or Mets? Diamondbacks have the best offense in baseball. They feature a lot of left-handed hitters. I find that concerning for the Milwaukee Brewers. The Mets are okay offensively. They hit a lot of home runs, I guess. Almost entirely right-handed hitters. I don't know if that really makes a difference which side of the plate they're hitting from. The Mets strike me as by far the better option because A, they're not as good of an offense, which I think is a good place to start, and B, depending on how things go on Monday, these two games that were rained out because of the hurricane and probably could have been played at least one of them sooner, but MLB decided, no, Braves, you want that gate? That's fine. You go ahead and do you. And then you're going to really, really mess up the Mets and Braves schedule. On Monday, the Mets are going to have to throw at least one more key starter. They threw David Peterson on Sunday because they had to beat the Brewers, which they did 5-0 to stay afloat in the playoff race. They're going to have to throw another one, maybe two more, because they could find themselves in a situation where they need that second win if they don't get the first one. Both teams go into that doubleheader needing a win. So it seems like the Mets would be the much better option. Now, if they get to Monday and the Braves sweep, or the Mets sweep for that matter, then the other team is out and Arizona is the team that sneaks in. They come to Milwaukee relatively rested and with that offense. So I think the Mets are the way the Brewers will want to go. But you tell me if I'm crazy. I mean, it seems obvious, but I bet it's not that obvious.
It's not because this is baseball. And yes. If you want to break it down, really, I was thinking like, well, the Brewers can't beat the Mets. You know, they can't afford to beat the Mets on Sunday because then that's 6 out of 6. And what are the odds that you win 8 of 9 in a season long series against the team? Actually, that's maybe not bad logic if you think of a little about it. We broke it down every which way last episode. If you want to hear my thoughts, you could probably go back to that. Maybe not worth it, though. I just have no idea at this point. Like, the Diamondbacks seem to be a tough matchup for these guys, and I still do think that. But also, like, they also don't necessarily strike me as a team with like the juice right now. And Brandon Pfaadt, who just struck out a million Brewers in his last outing, pitched on Sunday, so he would be down for the whole series unless you pitch him on 3 days rest. And I don't think they're gonna do that when they paid Eduardo Rodriguez all that money. So. I don't know which way I'm going to go with this, but who would the Mets be pitching? Let's at least like half, that gives us like a little half preview part of this too. We're not just posturing on hypotheticals. I think they're going to Severino McGill on Monday, which would then mean, well, it's the three lefties you saw this weekend, but what kind of rest would they be on?
I mean,
Manaea pitched Friday. Manaea pitched Friday and then Quintana Saturday.
You're right. And so Manaea would be available on regular rest for game 3 and on slightly short rest for game 2.
Yeah, he could pitch on 4 days rest, which is more than enough for game 2. But then who pitches game 1? See, the Mets are going to be coming to town a bit rattled on their pitching. But then again, there's just no way to predict it. Like, Francisco Lindor looks healthy, and that's not a bat you want to see. But the Diamondbacks of Ketel Marte, it could go anyway. This is baseball.
Yeah, I would say they're completely rattled. I think, you know, the doubleheader, if they need both of those pitchers, well, either somebody's going on short rest or they have a bullpen game 1, which might not, you know, those aren't like an easy thing to overcome.
No,
for the opposing
not an
offense,
easy task.
Generally.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all. More teams in these kind of series, I think, should do it. Like, the Brewers should do it in game 2 if they can. If they can, they should absolutely do that.
I agree with you.
That is the option I feel most confident in outside of Freddy Peralta.
Well, there's
honestly, I feel confident in Freddy Peralta just because, like, you have to do it. You have to pitch him game 1 at this point. RIP Colin Ray game 1 take. That went by the wayside, just like Colin Ray's, like, everything. He mm-hmm. seemed to run out of gas. Run out of gas at the end of the year, JR.
Yeah, that take did not age. He will almost certainly not be making the roster on the wild card round after throwing, what, he threw 106 pitches on Sunday.
Yeah.
That guy's.
He did his job. Got to tip your hat to him for doing his job all year, making 30 starts for the club, 170 something innings. Like, great year for Colin Ray, especially on that contract, but we'll not be on this
roster.
We'll take it from here.
The Brewers hit Sean Manaea very well in the opportunity to see him. You talked about a bullpen game. Well, that's essentially what Saturday was. You had four innings from Tobias Myers, but Jared Koenig opens. They get all their A bullpen in that game, and they were fantastic. They beat a Mets team that, again, really needed the win. They shut them out, 6-0. So that was about as good as it gets, and that really shows you the potential of what this Brewers team had. I vibes-centric thing here, but you talked about how it'd be the loss on Sunday, honestly, it makes it feel better. Oh, they didn't sweep the Mets for six games this season.
I am 100% serious about that, too.
Yeah, but also that loss really benefits the Brewers. It makes things muddier. And creates the situation that we have on Monday. Like, you didn't want to soften that up in any way, shape, or form. And they would have if they had, let the Mets lose. Then it's not as urgent for the Braves to go out and have it to throw their guys. In any event, it helped the Brewers to lose, I think, from a structural standpoint, but also a vibe standpoint. They do win 2 out of 3 in both series to close the year. I think they still look like they're playing really good baseball for a team that already had their destiny sewn up very early in the week. We knew that the miracle scenario where they somehow get a chance to skip the wild card round was out the window, and they still played pretty well. Like, they look good. And teams that look good at the end of the year, that means nothing in the playoffs, but it sure feels better, right? It feels like this team
still has. Yeah. It does feel better. I think part of it too is, like, this team has felt different all year. They're constructed different. They're led by a different person, but it's felt a little different. Like, this year was probably more fun, I think, than last year. And yeah. I can't remember, but people can debate how fun 2021 was because they won 95 games, but it didn't, like, maybe I'm retroactively placing the NLDS loss on the funness of their regular season, but it didn't feel like that was super fun because they never scored. Anyway, this team's just different. And so they're going into the playoffs with a little bit different of a feel around them. And that's not just because of the way they played this last week, but for sure, like, while they were not super duper trying, they still played well. And I don't really know what that means, but it certainly is better than everyone on the offense slumping.
Yeah. Cause
if you're going to score runs, like, guys have to be hitting the ball to do it. And Rhys Hoskins is swinging it better. RIP your guy, Sal Frelick. It was going to happen, JR. It was going to happen. Yeah, we'll talk. We can get into it whenever you want. But they just have some guys that are swinging it okay right now. Jo Ortiz has been better. You probably would like, some more fire from Contreras and Adames and Churio, but we see those guys. They're really good. They can do it on a moment's notice.
Yeah, I do feel like back in 21, that was one of the things that sort of bothered me. Again, there's just not a lot of lines to truly be drawn data-wise between good finishes and how they do in the postseason. But 2021, the ending was a little bit of a meh, like, for one thing, they had to deal with a Cardinals team that won, I think, like 17 in a row. So the clinch took forever. They got it, but then they just petered out at the end of the season. And that certainly extended into the playoffs when they scored 2 runs in game 1 and 0s in 2 and 3. And that's how they got behind 2-1 and then lost 5-4, I think it was, to the Braves. So probably won't have to see the Braves again. Might see the Diamondbacks again. I'd be really surprised if you consider that. You would think in this doubleheader, the team that wins game 1, which automatically gets a spot in the playoffs, would just kind of take it easy and throw nobody's, the guy that they called up for the doubleheader to do game 2.
You can't do it. Can't do that.
I just don't know why they wouldn't, though. There's, like, literally, no, they start the playoffs the next day.
You literally can't. There's no 29th man for these doubleheaders.
Oh, they don't do that in September. Once
they've already expanded the rosters. No, it's.
Oh, I hate that.
So I mean, you could maneuver it around a little bit between games, taxi squad some guys, but that may impact your playoff roster as well because you might be optioning guys right before the playoffs and you can't bring them back.
Can't do that.
So
how do you get through a game?
I was talking to the Mets people, and they seemed pretty insistent that Tyler McGill would pitch game 2, no matter what happened in game 1 with I think Severino's pitching it. I don't know. It feels a little different. It feels like, okay, well, they'll sit all their guys and they're not going to win. Like, it just feels like it's such a slim chance for the Diamondbacks. If this was a Diamondbacks pod, we would be hosting it at Arby's. Roast beef and cheese.
We would be eating Arby's and thinking about
being chewed.
The dark abyss.
Yes, the dark abyss, the doom of baseball. Nothing like that with a sesame seed bun and roast beef and oozy cheddar running between your gums and your molars.
I got to tell you, Kurt, if I were them, I simply wouldn't have lost an 8-0 lead last Sunday against the Milwaukee Brewers baseball organization.
Or lost on Saturday when the Padres were openly saying, "We don't care. Here's Kyle Higashioka and some other guys that I've never heard of."
Yeah, they just went all out in the 8th inning or whatever that was. Was it the 9th?
Ninth inning. I think it's like a scoreless tie going into the ninth or something. Yeah.
I mean, Arizona had this on a silver platter. They finished the season with 6 games at home and they have not done the job. So
against the Giants aren't bad and the Padres are good, but the Padres weren't trying. So they led 8-0 on Sunday. But end of conversation.
They are going to think about the game a lot longer than Brewers fans will. That was a fun moment. Oh, they came back from 8 down. How crazy. That's never happened. And then it's only happened like a couple times in franchise history. Yeah, well, the Diamondbacks, they're thinking about it. That was a deeply, deeply felt loss at this point in the season. All right, well, you mentioned it. Let's talk about it. This is coming up on Monday here, which is sort of a kind of a workout day, meet the media sort of day. This is, I think, the day last year when we found out Brandon Woodruff was not going to be available for the postseason. Tough blow. It is the annual ceremonial thing that the Milwaukee Brewers do, and that is unveil a really bad injury right before the playoffs. This year is not spared, although this one a little bit less, I would say, surprising because you saw it with your own eyes. Sal Frelick goes up for a ball on Friday night up against the right field wall. There's some padding there, but there's also a little carved cutout, which made it kind of an awkward fly into the wall. And he came
to
down
which
with
I have questions. Injury. I can't believe I've never questioned this before. But
yeah, I'm trying to think what that's for. There must be a view of some sort.
I understand the purpose. It's so that the grounds crew can see the field. But I do wonder what the need is. And this is me using, you know, hindsight to my advantage here. It's not fair, not a fair argument. But if I'm going to call out the Reds first base tarp for lacerating Darren Ruff's entire knee because it had metal sticking out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I've never seen. I don't think I've seen that sort of thing in the right field or left field wall before. Whoops.
Truly something I've never interrogated.
But
myself.
Honestly, don't jump.
I didn't even know it was there.
It's like Giannis going down the lane. Don't jump.
It's like Giannis going down the lane in a game late in the season where they know their playoff seed already. And I mean, I don't know. This will come down to the argument of telling your players not to play hard. Like, I don't know how you do that, how you just turn off the switch. But it does seem like that was a decision he didn't have to make, jumping up into the wall. I mean, it's going foul. Play it safe, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what you do there.
You don't jump. It's tough. You make a business decision. You don't jump. I mean, that's the look. That's the way Sal Frelick plays. Mm-hmm. He has one gear. But you just don't jump. I don't know what other way to put it. It's like me playing pickup game. You just don't jump. Mine is because I can't.
Yeah, I was going to say yours very, very different circumstances.
I still don't.
Anyway, Frelick, it's a bone bruise. It's not structural, but he was on a crutch on Saturday. I mean, he's obviously not going to play in the wild card series. One would assume this means Blake Perkins is going to be your full-time outfielder along with Garrett Mitchell and Jackson Churio. This is a very different outfield than we envisioned coming into the season. You could have easily thought, oh, it'll be Christian Yelich, Joey Weimer, and Sal Frelick at some point in the postseason. It is none of those three. So that is a loss. Now, I want you to tell me how much of a loss you think it is, because there are two things I know about Sal Frelick that I think are significant here. One is that he is a very good defender, tremendous defender. I don't think you lose anything there if Garrett Mitchell is now your right fielder and Blake Perkins your center fielder. I think you're okay there. He was also swinging a pretty good bat by Sal Frelick's standards. He was hitting the ball very, very well. I have sort of jokingly predicted that he would hit a home run in the postseason. I still kind of believe that. I still kind of stand by that. He's hit 2 home runs all season. They were in back-to-back games in May, but I just had a feeling. That's not going to happen, but this is as good as he has hit. Now, I think overall offensively, of course, he's not a stud. He's not an offensive stud. He does not hit the ball hard. He doesn't strike out, puts the ball in play, but he's not going to do a whole lot for you. On the other hand, they don't have options that are better. Like Blake Perkins is same, you know, like he maybe has a little more power in there, but I wouldn't necessarily count on it. So, yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I feel like you could easily argue this away as a lateral move, other than it cuts into your depth, obviously, quite a bit, but maybe it's worse than I think. I don't know. Can you give me your rundown of how you view it?
It's not good to lose players at this point of the year. And the thing is, like, Sal was hitting the ball kind of hard a little more. The real thing about this is, like, in my mind, Blake Perkins has not hit the ball well in the second half. In the month of September, it's been pretty poor. And so now you're going to need... You're going to need him to play every single day. And maybe they were going to choose that center field defense. And then like go Garrett Mitchell at DH, which
really
more than pop. I think that was very much in the realm of possibilities, probably was the way I would have leaned. Cause then otherwise who's your DH? Jake Bowers?
No, that's
is that your DH?
Well, no, it's Rhys Hoskins, and then Jake Bowers is the guy playing first base.
And you're playing Jake Bowers. My point.
Yeah,
remains.
I know what your point is.
And you can't lift Jake Bowers because then you're putting Gary at first base in a playoff game, and that's probably not a good idea. So
It
kind of, unless you DH Churio and play Mitchell in a corner and play Mitchell in left.
I don't know.
We didn't really see that at all, and I think they would have liked the Mitchell at DH because then you can go Gary with him as well.
Dude, Gary Sanchez has not been good either. Gary Sanchez had a really bad close to the season. So like they are really short on offensive players their offense has been okay, but the individuals have been few and far between.
Yeah. I mean, this gets back to the whole thing about the three and a half hitters. They've got Contreras, they've got Adames, they've got Churio, and then they've got sometimes Garrett Mitchell. Like his really good is really good, but his really bad is he can't hit a high fastball. So that's sort of where they're at. I do think Rhys Hoskins is coming along nicely. And of course we've all been waiting for the big postseason homer. And if it doesn't happen, whoops. So much for that 17 million. Guess he'll be back next year anyway, but yeah, it's bad to lose Sal Frelick. I think losing one of your starting players is a really good defender and can make stuff happen on the bases. And, you know, who knows, could have a 500 BABIP for 2 weeks and then,
that's right.
You know, David Eckstein is way to some stuff in the playoffs. That's probably a bad thing. And yeah, well, that's Kurt's analysis. Thanks for tuning in.
I don't know if you have a sense whether or not you think he'll be back for a later series. I mean, obviously you can't plan for any of that, but you know, it doesn't sound like they think he's coming back. I mean, that you could see a scenario, but you're taking a risk if you put him on a roster and he's half of Sal Frelick. Like the speed is such an asset. Like if you don't if your hip is busted, I don't know exactly how you're going to have that at full capacity. And if you don't have that, what do you have? So I don't know, man.
I mean, here's the Galaxy Brain take on this.
Okay.
I mean, first, okay, not Galaxy Brain take here. I just think he's back for the NLDS. Give him a week. Hopefully it heals up and then he can move enough and you can get him on, you know, you got five games there. Galaxy Brain take is this. The bench JR is pretty thin. It is not the strength of this ball club. Okay, there you said it.
It's quite bad.
What if he's just a decoy? What if he's just a decoy? You have to think of a very specific situation in which the other team's like, no, we will not bring in this right-hander because Sal Frelick could come in the game.
Yeah, don't you have to be a good hitter for there to be reason to make a move lefty righty? I mean,
look, it was a fun thought in my head. The other team's got a lefty on the mound, and it's like Joey Ortiz or someone up, and they're like, oh, I don't know, they could go to Sal Frelick here, and the Brewers put Sal Frelick on deck, you know, they have Joey Ortiz on deck, but Sal Frelick's just sitting in the dugout, you know, like if they bring in the righty, so they stick with the lefty. This was a good idea in my head, but that's nonsensical. You don't use a roster spot in the playoffs on that. Never mind.
I want Sal Frelick.
That was dumb.
Picturing Sal Frelick in like Kirk Gibson's body hitting that home run that I'm so sure is happening, and then like limping around the bases We need this to happen. I need this. It's going to happen now. NLDS, the Brewers just have to get that far. And you're absolutely right. This is going to happen.
What would be the historic sports broadcasting call that you would apply most directly to Sal Frelick doing that? Would it be, do you believe in miracles? Or what about, I don't believe what I just saw? Or what about, he did what?
I don't know.
Or there's a deep drive to left field.
It wouldn't be to left field, brother. That guy, he's going to need to pull it with every ounce of strength he can muster if he's going to put one out of the yard. So, I don't know, man. This is, I need a better catalog of, I guess, great legendary calls in my head to answer this question appropriately. I'm sure there's a very funny answer in there that I'm not thinking of.
Miracles is pretty good.
It's so good. I just watched that movie again, the Disney reenactment of Miracle. My son loves that movie. It's a slaps. It's just incredible. I love it so much. As Disney movies go, it's as good as it gets, in my opinion. Let's talk about this roster a little bit more. You know, the more we talk about the roster, it gets a little meaningless down the line.
It gets pretty boring.
It does. Because you just said the bench is terrible.
It's fun stuff to talk about. It is. I mean, we sat in the clubhouse for about 15 minutes today, like a couple of us. We were just debating a couple of last spots. And, you know, we're like, this is stupid, but it's kind of fun.
There's one name that's really the center of my interest when it comes to this, and that's
Joe Ross.
Well, maybe as it relates to Brian Hudson, because
Isaac Collins.
Isaac Collins or Tyler Black for that last spot? Will Eric Haas make the postseason roster? What do you do with the bullpen? Will you have, Joe Ross or Brian Hudson or Deal Hall or?
Yes, listen, all of
Yes, Brian Hudson is the curiosity here because he did not come back this last week. The AAA season ended. We did not see him. We did not see Jacob Mizorowski. I'm still little bummed about that, but we'll leave that.
There he goes again. Bring it up.
Yeah. I can't not say his name, but we will move on very quickly. Brian Hudson, though, is really interesting to me. His results at AAA were good. Again, as we mentioned last week, friend of the pod, Jack Stern, noted that his some of the velocity wasn't great, especially as it relates to the sweeper, some effectiveness issues, which they were seeing when he came back from that oblique injury. And, you know, like as the season went on, he just wasn't as good. He was still really quite good. And he had a tremendous first half of the season. That doesn't mean you are guaranteed a spot on the second half or on the playoff roster. I get that. But it sure feels like he's still doing the job. And it just would blow my mind that you have a guy with that much workload and a 1.74 ERA, and he doesn't end up on the playoff roster. But I would also think it's quite the leap to go from a guy who's been pitching most of September at AAA to suddenly put him on the big league playoff roster when you have a really good bullpen as it is. It has gotten to the point where I don't think he's going to make the roster. I don't know if you agree with that, but it just, you got to have him here, don't you? And then it's a question of whose spot he takes, because there are a finite number of bullpen guys you can use. Unlike the hitters, there are lots of choices here, and the bullpen is going to be how they win games. So talk to me about Brian Hudson specifically, Kurt.
Brian Hudson will be here.
Brian you
Hudson
think?
Will be on this roster. I think he has to be.
Why do you think he has to be?
So there have been some weird, I don't want to call them games, but just some oddness with like what the Brewers have said and then what they've done. It has not exactly lined up. And I do not think this last month has been fair to one Brian Hudson. I get why they sent him down, but I just don't like the way this last month has gone in terms of psyche, in terms of, like, as we've talked about, the human side of things, whatever. I still think he's going to be here. And maybe I will have egg on my face for once again trying to read into what this club is saying. But you can start to see kind of why he was not called up at the end of the AAA season. They have this... part of the thing with Brian Hudson is he does not recover great from starts. The Brewers have said this. Or not from right. starts, from outings. The Brewers have said this. So in keeping the bullpen that they had, not only did they not have guys with options, the only guy with options was Kevin Hergett. He got shipped out for Nick Mears, who they needed to see. Because he was coming back from the IL and they hadn't seen him and they needed a way to see him because there's no options, no minor league seasons. You get it. There was no one to really kick to the curb unless you kick Hobie Milner to the curb, which, as we've talked about, they seem clearly intent on not doing. But also Hobie provides something of like a last week of the year, this guy's got a rubber arm. He can just eat innings. He can pitch in four of these games, get us to the finish line, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need to see Brian Hudson that badly right now. Like, we've seen what he's done. He's, you know, pitching, throwing at Arizona. I think that's kind of what it came down to. Like, same reason Bryce Wilson was never activated. They just don't want to burn someone else's spot for him. But ultimately, it felt like, and this is maybe reading into Pat Murphy's words once again, in Pittsburgh, that he was going to be on the playoff roster. That's how it seemed to me.
Okay. That actually makes a ton of sense, because if you get to the finish line with Hobie Milner, who, by the way, was pitching very well, we were down on him, but he was pitching better. He was okay. So finishing strong, it made me wonder, well, maybe Hobie Milner is the guy who gets that spot, who gets that last spot, and it's instead of Hudson. But now, if they've gotten to the finish line, so they don't have to DFA Hobie, they can keep him on the 40 man through the playoffs. So there's still the option that he comes back. I don't know how you feel about that. We could talk about that probably in more of a post-season podcast format. I don't think there's a lot of evidence that he'd be back, but he does have a rubber arm. He has been effective at times. He's a great dude. We love Hobie, and I'm glad he's still around. But brass tacks, you know, you gotta go for the guys who are capable of being hammers. And that's I think what you have with Brian Hudson. What do you make of the pitches not being as strong? Like, second half of the season, I think we saw it. There was a decline. I don't know if it was a decline that I would say, wow, you can't have him on the roster anymore. But, you know, I guess if Jack Stern has numbers, you know, AAA, you get those StatCast numbers that suggest he's not as effective, or that the velocity is down, or that the movement is down. I guess that's a concern. That would be the type of thing that, you know, retroactively, if he gets lit up in an inning in the playoffs, you look back and like, well, the signs were there. Why didn't they listen to them? So I don't know. What do you make of that?
I think it ultimately, to me, it comes down to this with Hudson. I feel like Pat Murphy's saying this. I've seen him do this all year. I saw him pitch 60 innings and he had an ERA significantly under 2. Mm-hmm. The last couple of months, last month or so, like, it clearly wasn't like perfect. It wasn't fully right, but he was still getting the job done. He was still pretty good. And he's throwing 91, 92 in AAA. Like, he's gotten his reset now. He hasn't pitched in a week in a game. So theoretically, like, the fastball velo at least will be there. And with him, we're not talking about a guy with elite, like, stuff that pops off the eye.
Exactly.
There's a bunch of different characteristics that make his pitch mix and, like, what he does work. There's just different ways for him to get out. It's like, that's what I kept thinking watching him this year, is like, it's not just a one trick pony. Like, when Aaron Ashby's velo declined, it was like, oh, this is not going to work well. Mm-hmm. Brian Hudson gets by at 90. So he's not at the top of my trust tree. There's a lot of good relievers right now that I would want to see instead of him, but there could be a spot for him for sure. And he can give you multiple innings. So, and in the playoffs, everything too, we talked about the recovery. There's days off, not in the wild card series, but there's more days off in the playoffs, and that should help as well.
Any other roster decisions that you're thinking about right now that really you don't know how the Brewers are going to...
Who you got? Tyler Black or Isaac Collins?
For me, it's Tyler Black. We've talked about this. Oh, so you thought, as you boiled it down, you told me it's going to come down to who the better base runner is, or the better...
Well, there's a couple ways to look at it. There's a couple ways to look at it. I mean, maybe there's a world in which Tyler Black does appear as a pinch hitter, and the Jesse Winker, well, he can draw a walk roll. But the thing with this team is, like, who the heck are they going to pinch hit for?
No, that's right.
There's like a very specific spot where they would pinch hit Lift Terang for a pinch hitter. If they haven't used Gary already in that game, that's about it. Otherwise, Gary, or I don't even know if they can pinch hit for Mitchell anymore, because you don't have that fourth outfielder without Freeland.
Yeah.
No, so that's where I think Isaac Collins might be he's on our prediction for the roster, because he can pinch run and he can play the outfield. But, like, I don't love the circumstance where you're lifting Garrett Mitchell and it results in Isaac Collins being the one that has to come into the game. I would just let it ride with Garrett Mitchell. So that is the spot I'm probably most concerned about with the Brewers, is like that specific instance, is they just don't have a lot of flexibility. And that's also why they're not going to carry 15 position players.
Yeah.
Unless they just pinch run for everybody, which is probably not a good idea.
They can all run already. They don't need to pinch run except Rhys Hoskins. He can't run. No,
like where would, where would Tyler Black hit? In what situation? Maybe like as a DH?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. They're not going to pinch hit for Rhys Hoskins, presumably, if he's the DH, and then, or even the first baseman. You're not going to have Tyler Black be the guy.
Is Jake Bowers the DH now?
I think so, right? I mean, who, in, if it's not Gary Sanchez, like if it's a lefty, it's probably Gary Sanchez.
That mean, what maybe else? that's Tyler Black. Maybe.
Ah, that's a really good thought, actually. I mean, in on that.
It feels like it's been Jake Bowers all year. So it's going to be Jake Bowers, but like
Jake Bowers has been so bad at the end of the year. There's guys who've been so bad. Kurt, they're a hitter short. They're a hitter short of a World Series run. Unfortunate that Christian Yelich got hurt, because that would have been of a hitter.
We have retroactively come to the conclusion we should have come to in the Sal Frelick discussion, which is,
they're in trouble.
They need a hitter.
They need a hitter. Kurt, is there any chance? Is there any chance on God's green earth that Christian Yelich is available late in this postseason?
I'm not touching that. No,
can't do it. Can't do it.
No, it's not. No,
probably not. Almost certainly not. I don't know. I don't think so either, but it sure would be to their benefit if he decided, maybe we'll give it a shot, take some swings, see how we feel. Obviously that's not almost certainly not going to happen, but okay, we're pretty close to going through some of the granular details from this crazy last week. I guess it wasn't that crazy. They knew where they were headed by the end of this week, but still there were some things. Any big picture topics that you want to touch on before we get granular?
No, let's get granular.
Let's do it. Okay, here it is. Do this every week. Looking at some of the more granular details from the week that was, here is three up, three down. Kurt, Bryce Terang, 50 stolen bases. That is a nice round number. That is a good number. I respected that he had speed. I respected that he was a pretty good base stealer. I don't know if I'd say he's the fastest guy on this team. I think it's debatable with Mitchell and Churio where those guys fall. I don't know. You could probably draw him out of a hat, but I did not think that guy was a 50 stolen base guy, especially because he really struggled getting on base for the latter part of the season. Very impressive stuff. That is the fifth best stolen base total in a season in Brewers history. I believe Paul Molitor had 54 next on the list. Was never going to catch Scotty Pods or Tommy Harper or anything like that, but still really a great showing from Bryce Terang. Among the many cool statistical things that the Brewers did this season. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. You know he's going to run all day. If they find a way to get that man on base, he is the David Eckstein. If they find a way to, like, flick a ball down the left field line or, you know, draw a walk or an infield single, that man's going to be stealing all day long. And certainly he showed he could do that in the regular season.
If Bryce Terang hits, there's no way this team loses.
That's
kind of how I feel about it. Like, Bryce Terang gets three hits, it's over for the other team.
Bryce Terang X Factor question mark?
Sure. Okay. I mean, he's pretty high on a different story we'll have coming up, ranking the importance
of
each player on the roster by importance.
Is it possible, Kurt, that we still don't understand? Because, okay, here's the thing I didn't ask you in the big picture. How did this team win 93 baseball games? How did this team win more games than they won last year when they subtracted two elite starting pitchers, also lost their best player for a good long time, and didn't have their closer for 4 months? Are we completely undervaluing? I mean, was Moneyball diametrically incorrect? Are we wrong? Is defense just truly like the thing you want in Major League Baseball? Because that's the only thing I can think of that makes this team truly special is the defense. And they won 93.
Was that the Moneyball thing? Defense doesn't matter.
Correct. Defense doesn't matter. Find guys who can bring you offense on the margins, and they, you know, find fat guys who can walk, dudes who, you know, like just find a way on base, and defense be damned. It's super, you know, Scott Hedeberg, super easy to play first base. Tell him wash. But I don't know.
I feel like, 20 years after the fact, we know more than we did then. And we do, in fact, know the value of defense and have a much better number to put on it. It matters quite a bit. I mean, not enough to single-handedly make a team win 93 games, but you can win a lot of games when you have a good defense and you like just do a bunch of other things pretty well, and that's kind of what this team does.
I mean, just an incredible job by this team, honestly, because I did not think this team had that in them. I still am not sure how they do, but the manager obviously works very well with these players. The players, I think you got just about everything you could get out of a lot of these guys, with some exceptions even, but you know, William Contreras did end up passing Bryce Terang in Baseball Reference WAR for the season, but only by a fraction. So Bryce Terang's defense, at least by the WAR calculations put forth by Baseball Reference, which heavily love them some defense, really, really believes that Bryce Terang is one of the top three players on this baseball team. And maybe he is.
I don't know.
Pretty special on one side of the ball. I don't know either. What's your first one for 3-up-3 now?
I'm going to go with another stolen base total. Willy Adames got the 20 steals, a 30-20 season. He's going to get paid handsomely. It's kind of interesting because like a lot of the guys that are stealing bases, they're fast. We knew they could do this. We had no idea Willy Adames could steal 20 bases. He's like league average fast. Mm-hmm. And turns out, I mean, I would guess he probably hasn't even been thrown out that much. Let's take a look.
He's been thrown out four times, Kurt. Four times.
21 steals to four. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty dang good considering how, let's do some quick math, entering this year, he had stolen 30 bases and been thrown out 18 times.
It was so bad.
Pretty bad. No wonder he didn't run.
And in now his rookie year?
He's a really good base stealer.
Yeah.
Man, if Willy Adames had played defense this year at the rate that he had done in his career,
MVP.
He would be top five in the MVP race for sure. I think he might get some votes, some down ballot votes. I'm almost sure he will.
Yeah, probably.
Which I don't. He probably got some votes in 2021, right?
He finished
16th. So good for him. He'll get some votes again, entering his contract year, or entering his walk year, I should say. No. Finishing his walk year, entering free agency. What a year for Willy Adames. Man.
Truly special.
We've talked about him a lot, but yeah, incredible stuff. Someone's going to pay him $200 million.
Six steals in his rookie year in 2018, five caught stealing. Pretty much that sets the tone for you can't do it. And he's been single digits his whole career, and now here he comes in with 21 steals and just four caught stealing. Quentin Berry, first base coach, who's in charge of that base stealing. I mean, a wizard. He's a wizard. They're exceptional at this skill. They're the second best team in baseball in stolen bases, and they are going to use that skill to its maximum capacity when they get in the postseason. Willy Adames, you're right. We probably didn't talk about him enough for as valuable as he was. His defense did decline, but his offense was sensational. He had a really cool moment on Sunday where he was speaking to a fan, a softball player, who gave him her first home run ball, a softball that she had signed for him, and gave it to him. And then he signed something for her, and she was very emotional as he's walking away. It was a really, really cool moment. He was taken out of the game Sunday. Pat Murphy even acknowledging, like, full stop, that, yeah, it's probably his last regular season game with the Milwaukee Brewers. Everyone knows this. There's no secret that he's going to go into free agency and get paid a boatload of money, more than the Brewers are going to be willing to spend. Here is the question for you, Kurt Hoge. Should the Brewers spend that money?
Yes. My inclination is yes, but also, like, I do think they've got like a 3-4 win shortstop in Joey Ortiz because of the defense and like a little positive offensive regression. So you've got a pretty dang good option right there in house. Like, I'm always going to advocate for teams spending money. I think the Brewers should spend more money. Maybe Willy Adames is the guy, but a large part of that too is the intangibles and like the, you know, personality and how important he is and what he means to this franchise and the fans. And I don't know if that's always the right way to go about giving out these contracts. It feels like that's the kind of thing that can get you in trouble 5 years down the road. So I'm inclined to say maybe pass, but also you could pretty easily convince me that they should just pay Willy Adames because pay your good players. So did I not answer that well enough? Did I walk that line perfectly.
You did.
I think I walked the line. I think I did a really great.
This is one of the real answer
is I don't know. I'm glad I don't get paid to make these decisions because I could I can absolutely feel the appeal to pay him that money, but I think when you step back and I think if I'm in the shoes of dishing out this money and it's my money or I'm the GM, like I think a lot of it might be sentimental.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that's how you make a Rockies deal.
Every data point, unfortunately, points to the Brewers A, not doing this, and B, not even being smart if they do. The decline in defense is a notable thing as he heads into his early 30s. It's not guaranteed that he can keep this up at all. In fact, it's likely he doesn't. They just won 93 games without really making any considerable splash, except for one guy who did not contribute as much to the bottom line as I'm sure they would have liked. He hit a bunch of homers, talking about Rhys Hoskins, but you know, even he's a little bit of a distressed asset, a guy coming off of an ACL injury, and they probably got him for a little bit of a bargain. It isn't going to be money well spent, which is part of the reason why they're probably not going to be in a hurry to do that sort of thing again. They find a way to make this work internally by, you know, strength, finding the things that their guys are already good at and accentuating those, building a bullpen out of thin air. These are guys that are all DFA'd and stuff. And, you know, they didn't spend that much money. They went down in payroll over last year and they won more games. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, the manager, when the manager's saying it's his last game with the Brewers, last regular season game with the Brewers. I mean, the other thing on Willie, as we get into the Willie free agency discourse right before the playoffs, that's great stuff. I'm glad we're doing that. He is having a career year this year. I mean, 120 WRC plus ties his numbers from 2021. If this is a career year by any way you spin it on offense, yet the defense is in decline, it's like, unless he's going to do this every single year at the plate, like he's a career 109 WRC plus hitter who's soon going to be on the wrong side of 30. I guess he 2 years till he turns 30, but with the defense, we've seen it take a dip. I don't care what OAA says. The defense has not been worth 6.06 runs or whatever they're, however you, it's significantly plus anyway on here. I mean, there's still questions within the profile, but there are not questions about this. Willy Adames is super important to this team and this franchise and matters a lot for them to make a deep run.
This is a Prince Fielder situation. You let him go to free agency in 2011, and he's awesome for you all year long, and then into the playoffs, and then he walks. That's what's going to happen here. Willy Adames probably going to be awesome for you in the playoffs, and then he drinks for free in Milwaukee for the rest of his life. Who cares where he plays in 2025?
Where is he?
Number two.
Where were we? Was it you?
Number two. Yeah, let me go. Freddie Peralta got to 200 strikeouts. That's a really good number. He's the fourth pitcher. In Brewers history to have back-to-back, or I shouldn't say back-to-back, two seasons of 200 or more strikeouts, joining Corbin Burns, Giovanni Gallardo, and Teddy Higuera, three of probably, I mean, with all due respect to Ben Sheets, who I want to include in this as well, definitely three of the five best pitchers in Brewers history, so that's nice. I think they left him out there to try to get that strikeout when he wasn't performing well, but that's okay. That game didn't matter. It was a loss to the Pirates, 2-1. He still pitched okay. Freddie Peralta is a wild card for me, Kurt. He is not at his best right now. You've seen these long innings, this inability to put batters away. It doesn't seem like you can really trust him to go a third time through the order. I think that's fine in the wild card series when everybody's going to be fully rested and you're like in a three game sprint anyway. But I don't think that's something that you can feel good about trying to get deep into the postseason. This is their one guy, that you really feel like should be able to do that.
I don't know if we said it on the podcast. Maybe we did. No one on this team should touch the lineup a third time through. Nobody.
But at some point, you run out of ammunition if you do that every game. You know, like it's hard to bridge every gap. You get days off, though.
Yeah, I guess, but you don't. I mean, it's much easier to win in the playoffs when you got guys that can go six innings. Sure, but I don't want the Brewers. I don't want to see the Brewers in that spot. At some point, you're right. If you're going to win the whole dang thing, you got to do it. But in this wild card series, Not a single condition. You could say Freddie Peralta is perfect. There's six innings, Kurt. And I would say nope. Aaron Ashby, please.
Incredible six innings, though. Good work. Good job. that'll be it. Thank you for your service. You know, with the Mets having to go back to Atlanta, then back to Milwaukee, if that's how it plays out, he might be perfect through six innings on Tuesday. After, you know, they didn't even give him the night game. That's a 4:30 start. It's not the latest of the games on Tuesday. The Mets got done dirty, you know, like it's going to work out, I think, for the Brewers to have as much advantage as possible, but they got done dirty by the Atlanta Braves in Major League Baseball.
No, they have their charter flight and get to stay at the, is the Pfister five star? I don't know if the Pfister's five star. They get to stay at one of the nicest hotels in Milwaukee. Don't quote me on that because I've never stayed there. I don't stay at hotels in Milwaukee, so I have no idea. But anyway, they get to stay at one of the nicest hotels in Milwaukee. Oh, they get everything chartered for them and all their everything catered for them. They don't have to do anything besides think about playing baseball. I feel so bad for them.
Well, all I know is they didn't get a day off when everyone else did, and that's going to cost them a couple pitchers in the wild card series. So,
actually, I feel less bad for the Braves because guess what? You could have bumped these games up, bucko.
Oh, I don't feel bad for the Braves at all. The Braves are the reason this is happening. Yeah. I feel bad for the Mets. I mean, yeah, do I feel bad for any New York sports franchise? Absolutely not.
No, it's insofar as much as I feel bad for, like, as my rant suggested, I don't feel bad for the travel of these. JR, last Sunday, no, I'm not going to complain about my own travel. I'm not doing that. Rowdy Tellez, number two for me.
Oh, speaking of, because you were thinking about your flight from Pittsburgh all the way to Denver to get home, you were thinking about Pirates.
This was going to be my number two. I can't believe I'm doing this on pre-postseason pod, but we got to
Let's go, though. We love Rowdy. Was their 2021 playoff offense. That is your playoff connection to the Milwaukee
there
Brewers.
You go. And he was left off playoff roster last year for Jesse Winker. And who is this year's Jesse Winker?
Oh, it's, I mean, they don't have any offensive players.
I need to preface this before I say it, because it's going to sound like an insult to the person when I say it. The guy who you're like, oh yeah, put him on the roster because he can walk. It's Tyler Black.
Tyler Black.
That's the role. That's why we said Winker could be on the roster. Yeah, not great. Anyway, Rowdy Tellez, another first baseman that struggled in the field. How about the Pirates cutting him four plate appearances shy of a $200,000 bonus?
Absolute trash. Just trash and behavior.
Like,
did you see the Pirates sat Isaiah Kiner-Falefa on Sunday?
I did, that's why I brought it up too. Now, there's a little bit of, I don't want to call it water carrying, that's happening here, where the Pirates are like very clearly sending a message of, he could have played. Listen to me here. Ben Sherrington, their general manager, when he spoke to reporters on Tuesday, I was there. Well, I wasn't there, but I was in Pittsburgh, so I got the gist of what happened. He made it very clear that they are aware of all bonuses. He kind of like volunteered way too much information in this. He was like, look, I'm aware of every bonus. Now, that doesn't mean we did it because of that. In fact, we didn't do it because of that, but we know about all the bonuses. We're aware of everything. And then to Sunday sit IKF, so you knew he was four short. And when you put the lineup out Saturday night, you knew he wasn't in there. Mm-hmm. And then you give him the decision an hour before first pitch. Like, now, sure, I would have said, put me in there. I want four plate appearances, but also you kind of like, you're putting him in a bad position.
Right. Like, even now, he's the greedy ball player who wants four plate appearances.
Exactly. Now he's saying it's about me. It's not about the team. It's about me. Now this would be this would be a spot where, like, I don't know. This should never happen. You just give him the plate appearances. You do right by the guy. You let Lorenzo Cain reach 10 years of service time when he's the worst hitter in the league. Like, you just let him do it. That's doing right by a guy. This is, I can't believe I'm talking about the Pirates on this, but like, I was there for 3 days and boy, oh boy, are things bad there. It is a poorly run organization. And you can say what you want about Brewers ownership and people do, but like, it's not even comparable. And the front office is way better in Milwaukee as well, but that's obvious.
Yeah, I was going to water carry myself a little bit for the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, we are very critical, I think, of some of their decisions. And you know, we're allowed to be. And I think you're allowed to raise your game when the team is successful a lot of years in a row, but not that successful. You know, they don't go deep into the postseason, and you can kind of break that down and stuff. But, like, I do think they have an owner who truly does want to win. And for the most part, not always, but for the most part, doesn't meddle in what the front office is doing and doesn't doesn't screw around with players' contracts like that. Yeah. I mean, that's just
and to be fair,
nothing would like that would happen here.
To be fair, the owner is probably not involved in this decision. Agreed. Like the lineup the day before, a $200,000 bonus. When your team is 71 wins, you're not calling the owner about that. Like, you just need to have a group of people that like understands a little common sense.
Yeah.
Like this does affect you. This does shape your reputation around the league. Do you think players are stupid?
Right.
Like, now granted, the group of players the Pirates are shopping in, no offense to these players, it ain't Gucci.
Well,
it's like that's me. I shop at Aldi. So
you buy your own bags. Jeff Passan of ESPN pointed that out, and it seemed harsh in the moment, but he's right. Part of the problem is that Rowdy Tellez is the first baseman you're relying on. You know, they should spend money to get a really good first baseman, but they're never going to do that. The guys who sign with Pittsburgh are people who are either too young to go anywhere else yet, or they're trying to reclaim their careers or just try to hang around. Like, they're not fishing in those ponds. And I mean, you could argue the Brewers are kind of similar, but the Brewers,
the Brewers are really good at
them succeed. Yeah,
I said it,
the Brewers understand.
I said it earlier this year. The difference between the Brewers and the Pirates on like a macro level is not entirely different. But
you're right.
In the weeds, it could not be more different. And that's where all the difference is made. It matters a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, that's enough Pirates talk. I'm sorry.
And positive. The positive stuff is getting to me. We got to
I spent time in Pittsburgh and like, You just can't get it out of your mind.
I mean, the Brewers have been to the playoffs every season but one since 2018. Pretty rad. Pretty cool. That hasn't happened in Pittsburgh that way. My number three, funny moment. I don't know if you saw this. I think you probably did. Saturday night, there was a foul ball, and there was a pretty good microphone feed on Fox. This was a game on Fox. And Adrian Johnson, the home plate umpire, very clearly, as the ball goes flying by, he's like, "Mother, I'm gonna bleep that. Don't worry, Kurt. I see.
I was gonna say, I was like, we do swear sometimes, but not on the
all
show.
The time. Not on the show. Though it'll be bleeped out. I'm sorry, mother. So good. So good.
Either of your kids started swearing?
Oh God. So.
Because it's going to be directly traced back to you if they
100% 100%,
and maybe you're fine with that. Maybe you're fine with that. I'm not judging. You can do whatever you can.
If they're
eight, if they want, like whatever.
No, hopefully not. Of my many flaws that I have, I am pretty liberal with this, with the language, with the blue line. And that's not blue language. It's just I don't mind using the F word all the time, essentially, and not at work. And not in public settings, but you know, it's not uncommon for me to say it. I obviously, like all normal human dads, I try not to swear around my kids, but I have. I've lost my temper about things. I've been frustrated with things that have nothing to do with them. And you know, I've said it. I will say that my older son, he has sworn, but he's very good about it. And he doesn't swear unless he is really deeply hurt or frustrated. And just, it's kind of a way to let me know that it's just, He just needs me to understand how frustrated he is right now. So it is not something I correct him. I tell him he cannot use those words in any circumstances, but he is very good. He does not, so far as I know, with his friends, who knows, but I have not caught him swearing very often. I will say that. And my daughter, I think would die if she swore. She's 10 years old. I think
she is the queen of the world.
She is a very sweet soul. She is a beautiful, beautiful soul. I have two very different children. I love them both deeply, very different ways. But yes, I am fortunate. My kids are pretty fantastic. So they haven't picked up that particular vice yet. And I have tried to be better and have been better, I think, if I'm allowed to try some self-assessment. I've been a little better.
Good. Carrying on.
It just feels good to swear into a microphone, even though it's going to get bleeped out. It just feels good. I don't know what to tell you.
Speaking of crowd things from, I guess non-play things from Saturday night. How about the crowd? Joey Ortiz said he was like trembling in the box. He was like,
really?
Was so loud. He was like shaking a little bit. It was so loud in there. I do think these playoff crowds are going to be a little more rambunctious than the past couple of years. That's just my vibe. Okay. I just feel like that goes back to this team's different.
And I think people are maybe starting to believe again. I don't know. If they listen to this podcast, well, they might not be.
Well, maybe a little.
Well, this episode, maybe they are. In July.
Yeah, we're in way too good a mood.
It's in July, they're like, this team stinks.
Anyway,
that's all I got. Nothing huge. Maybe. There. Just, that's all I got.
The Brewers are certainly advocating for it. They really want to fill that place. Obviously, that gives me the sense, the way that they've been like calling out, you know, you got to get these tickets. Probably aren't sold out yet. I'm sure they'll be close if they aren't actually. Later game times really help on that front. 4:30 to 6:30. That's pretty good to get a good crowd. So we'll see. We'll see. It's hard. They've gone backwards, you know, like they've gotten further and further from the World Series because of the added layers and the success they've had since 2018. So I think it's justifiable for fans to be a little bit jaded about what comes early, but especially if they beat this first round opponent, I think it's going to be good. It'd be the first playoff series win since 2018. All right, what didn't we talk about on 3 Up, 3 Down? Rhys Hoskins had the weirdest box score ever on Monday, opening up the week. He reached base 4 times, none of which was a hit. 2 walks, a catcher's interference, and a hit by pitch. I asked someone with Baseball Reference. We were able to ascertain 13 times in baseball history that somebody has reached in the same game through base on balls, catcher interference, and a hit by pitch. He is the first one to not have any at-bats whatsoever at any point in the game because he had the fourth plate appearance was also a walk. He is the first. That is a unique box score. It is a box score-agami where he was able to reach on those four methods. So very cool. Rhys Hoskins also had a nice play where he threw back to catch O'Neill Cruz sneaking off second base in one of those Pirates games. That would have been the Thursday day game, I believe. That was a good way to end the inning. That was a taut game that the Brewers played to close that series down. Tyrone Taylor, old friend, made a great catch against Blake Perkins in center field. How about that? He was doing a Blake Perkins. He's played some center for the New York Mets. Probably more of a corner outfielder as we saw when he was here, but he is capable of playing center and had a nice takeaway of Blake Perkins, who, by the way, will now homer in the postseason, transferring the vibes from Sal Frelick. Blake Perkins home run in the postseason, that is coming up. That's going to happen. I'm calling it right now. Also, Rhys Hoskins with his third Grand Slam of the year, that ties a franchise record. 10 Grand Slams for the team also ties a franchise record. I'm going to have a thing on jsonline.com this week early, looking at all the quirky stats from the year, some obvious, some a little under the radar. So hope you look forward to that. I really enjoyed writing that one, actually. Really enjoyed it. Like trying to channel Jason Stark, the great Jason Stark. Not sure if I fully succeeded on that front, but had a little fun. All right, Kurt, let's go back in time to Brewers past. That's what we do every week here. It is this week's edition of Remember When. All right, if we're talking about Blake Perkins or any unsung hero, that's what this is about. That's what the postseason is about. Randos. Randos that you had no idea were going to do anything in the postseason when you got there. Unieski Betancourt comes to mind. Jerry Hairston. The Brewers postseason lore, limited as it is filled with randos who have a really nice series. You know, Randy Wolf had a great game in the postseason against the Cardinals. These things happen. I'm going to go back to one of the most random of them all. Another visit to 1982. Everybody loves visiting 1982. It feels like with this movie out.
Especially me. Yay. Kurt, thanks, JR.
You know, I was sure that we had talked about this on a previous episode, but apparently not. It's the Mark Brouhard game. Brouhard, I think. Mark Brouhard in 1982. We have not. We've mentioned it, I'm sure, but it has not been a Remember When, at least according to my notes. I have doubled up on Remember Whens before. Hopefully I'm not doing that again, but according to my notes, we have not done it. Mark Brouhard, 1982, game 4, California Angels. The Brewers are down 2-1. They're facing elimination and Ben Ogilvie is dinged up. You know, that team was like this one. You had your starters and you didn't really need your bench. Didn't want to go to your bench. But in this game, Ben Ogilvie was not available. So Mark Brouhard is starting in left field. This is the only postseason game he played. He did not get into a game elsewhere in the ALCS. He did not get into a World Series game. Literally, not one at bat. But in this game, he was 3-for-4 in game 4. And what an adventurous 3-for-4 it was. In his first at bat, he singles up the middle in a way that it's like a 10 hopper up the middle. It is the goofiest little single up the middle. And you know what? He came around to score on the play. It is a 3-run little league home run for Mark Brouhard because center fielder Fred Lynn threw it away, tried to get Don Money, going to third base. It hits Don Money. It gets away. Doug DeCinse chases it down, the third baseman for the Angels, and throws the worst throw you've ever seen. He's just like a turnaround jumper is kind of what it looked like, way over the head of catcher Bob Boone. This went into the crowd. Mark Brohard had made it to third by that point. He trots home. It's 3-0 Brewers. He hits a double that looked like it kind of went off the face of DeCinse, but it was really kind of his hip into a tarp. Fans reached down and get it. Fan interference, but they ruled it a double. Coach manager Gene Mock did not like that call, but so that's a double for Mark Brohard to go with his 3-run Little League single. And then he homers after Don Money hits a grand slam. Brewers go up 6-1, 7-1 in this game, and then Don Money hits a grand slam to make it 7-5. So it's tense in the eighth inning. And up comes Brohard, and he's facing Dave Goltz. It's a 2-run homer. It's a bomb down the left field line. Fans are going crazy, and the Brewers are back on top by 4. Much more comfortable situation. They're ahead 9-5. They win that game, as most people have to know by now. Then they go on to win the next night. Win that series 3-2 against the Angels. That puts them into their first and only World Series. Mark Brohard thought he was going to get more playing time at the beginning of the season. Charlie Moore kind of beat him out early in the season, and Brohard ended up with only like 40 games. He had, I think, 4 homers during the regular season, so this playoff one was pretty rare. And that was it. That was the moment. Rando always comes through in the postseason, and that was Mark Brohard in 1982. All right, that's it. This is our last take of the year. Take of the week in the regular season. Let's do it, Kurt. We're closing it down with your take of the week. Here it is, Kurt Blanche.
Thank you for regaling us with tales from the 1982 Brewers. That was riveting. I personally was on the edge of my seat.
You weren't even listening. You don't even know what I was talking about.
No, I say that, and I've got a little mention of Brewhard coming in a story in a couple of minutes.
How about that?
What is this substance on my face? It's egg. It's egg on my face that I splattered there. JR.
Let me promise. I will not do any 1982 remember whens in the entire 2025 season.
Until the Brewers win the NLDS on a walk-off single in Game 5, or a go-ahead single in Game 5 to left field.
That's fine. We'll do Moustakas.
Then you can... Oh, I like it. Okay. I was trying to do it too good of a parallel, but okay.
Have I done Niger? We could do Niger. Anyway,
no one remembers that one.
yeah, that's a really tough one. No one knows the circumstance.
JR, I got no heat for you here. I have nothing but gratitude, however.
Gratitude.
The playoffs have been summoned. We are lucky enough to be among the lucky ones to get to cover the playoffs. That is awesome. The Brewers are at home, so that means you get to be there. So a lot of our colleagues that don't really ever cover baseball get to be there, but specifically like us and Todd as well. This is pretty cool. I need to take a little time to express this out loud, otherwise I get bogged down in the extra work part of it, and I could really be done. I could be done by now. That thought did cross my mind Sunday. Like, there's like 20 teams who are just done. But yeah, this is pretty sweet, huh? This is pretty cool. The Brewers are in the playoffs. This matters to a lot of people. Playoff baseball is awesome. Just because the Brewers have done it in the past doesn't mean like it's ever guaranteed in the future. So I kind of like, I don't even want to call it like a treat or like a reward for doing great work, because like... You have no control over whether the team you cover makes the playoffs. Well, maybe a little bit of control. Sometimes I think you can write some bangers of stories. Like Jacob Mizorowski called. You can force the team to call up Jacob Mizorowski. Oh, crap, never mind. We don't have any control, turns out. Turns out we have no control. Well, then.
We have tried. We have tried.
No, this is just fun. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of work, and that's okay. I hope people can enjoy it and like sink their teeth into this team and the postseason, and let love in once again, let hope in, and then let hope out when you get crushed. But that's part of sports too. So I don't know. This is not the blanchiest of my segments I've ever had, but it's from the soul, you know?
Yeah.
It's from the soul. Like when I'm trying to think of it. When Colin Ray pitches, it's from the soul.
All right.
No?
Jared
Koenig?
Sure. Absolutely.
That's all I got. We can wrap this thing up now. That was my soliloquy.
Major League Baseball is just very near and dear to my heart, as it is yours. It's really wonderful to be in part of this season. It is wonderful to cover a baseball team with you, Kurt Hoge. We'll throw in our other colleagues too, Todd Rosiak, Lauren Nickel among them. All tremendous, tremendous at what they do. And we are very, very, very lucky to be in this position. So yes, I am often rooting at least partially for the Brewers to get some home playoff games so I can myself cover it. It is a professional selfishness, I suppose. But I do love this time of year. It is a good time and it's going to be fun. And there's no data to suggest what happens next. The 84 win Arizona Diamondbacks won the National League last year. In fact, the Brewers have more wins than any of the teams that won the last three national, well, really the last four if we're counting 2020, which no one wants to do, but the last three National League teams to get to the World Series did not have as many wins as the Milwaukee Brewers. Not even close, actually. I believe five wins closer is like, I think the Braves had 88 wins. So there is no data to suggest one way or the other what's going to happen next. I think it's probably unlikely that the Brewers go to the World Series, but it is not off the table at all. So just kind of have to surrender to the madness of the moment that it could be over on Thursday or it could be, you know, over at the end of October. It's a very weird time. What a weird time to be alive, Kurt. It's going to do it.
No data, just vibes.
No data, just vibes. In fact, we've reached that point of the season, haven't we? That's the no data, just vibes. It's the postseason. And we will have you covered. We're going to try to get you some mini podcast episodes on this feed after these games. Game one, game two, game three. We'll see if we can pull it off. They'll be short, but possibly recapping what we saw, thoughts for the future, that sort of thing. And obviously, we will have another recap presumably next week at this time, looking back at where we are to that point in the postseason. We might be a postseason recap. It might be looking at a series with the Phillies. We'll find out. And hopefully you enjoy this run as much as we will. Thank you for listening to this edition of Micro Brew. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everybody.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.